I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A win at Forest, a defeat at the Riverside against Blackpool, with Borough 2 points above the relegation zone after 8 games. It's definitely not as rosy as it seems at the Borough, and we break it all down. And of course, we answer your podcast questions too. So let's get to it. We're the Borough Breakdown Podcast, and this is all your Borough Matchday chatter in a pod.
Want support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Ravanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Ravanelli spots out. Emerson!
Welcome back to the Borough Breakdown Podcast. We have Johnny, Dana and Tom. We are the Borough Podcast that gives you all of Borough Matchday chatter in a podcast. And well, a win and a defeat this week saw Borough slip into 16th place in the championship table with 9 points, 2 points above the relegation zone. Guys, as we start with all podcasts now, Dana, how are you feeling in 3 words?
Deflated, dejected and a little bit sad. But ignore the little bit because that's too many words.
Okay,
deflated,
so
dejected and sad.
Okay, I got it. Tom, how are you feeling?
It's Groundhog Day.
That's my
3 words. I think we just, it's every week now, isn't it? We're talking about how we need to improve week.
Come on then. Okay, why are you feeling this way then? Why are you feeling this way?
Oh, I mean, yesterday was, it just seems as though, again, deja vu, it's one step forward and two steps back with Borough, and we haven't ignited a run since, from my memory, the start of last season. And it just seems as though every time we take a step forward, there's something that brings us immediately back to square one again. And it was really poor yesterday, I thought, particularly in the second half. I do have some thoughts on the first half that we'll get into later. But yeah, I was really hoping after last week, because I did think back to our post-commentary podcast that we were negative leading, and I was thinking, were we too reactionary? Did we blow it out of proportion? But then this week happens, and I don't think that this week was entirely convincing either. So it's just a little bit deflating, and I do agree with Tom there. It is Groundhog Day, isn't it?
Go on, Groundhog Day.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, like I said, we're here kind of every week at the moment saying we need to improve. And, you know, out of the first, what, we've played 8 games now and won 2 of them. Like, it's not good enough, and it's carrying over from last season. As Dana said, it was the start of last season where we last properly put a run together. But when it hit January, even with all the new signings, it went downhill from there. You'd have thought at the end of last season, you know, with the new signings that came in, it might have picked up a little bit. But it just seems to be carrying on the same kind of vein of form. I don't want to look at it kind of too short term and that, oh, it's only 8 games of the season, because it's been going on longer than that.
Yeah, well, a couple of stats to go your way then, because I can understand your frustrations and appreciate it. It's still early doors in the season, you know, 10 games, you tend to see the league take shape, and then also December, February is normally a really pivotal part of the season, so it's always good to have these emotions early doors, because you want us to do well. But the stats were, in 2021, that Borough have only made 30. They've won 10 games in 2021. They've totaled, I think it was 39 points in 2021. Derby have made 36 points, and they've had obviously all of the financial troubles they've had this season. And then also, Neil Warnock has lost more games percentage-wise than Jonathan Woodgate did. So Jonathan Woodgate lost 40% of his games, and Neil Warnock lost 44% of his
games.
And
Warnock has had the blessing of probably better options than...
Don.
Yeah. than what Woodgate had.
Yes, so appreciate Warnock has a much better win percentage record than Jonathan Woodgate, but of course it seems that we either win games or we lose them. We don't grind out a draw when we most need it. So that's obviously when you're looking at your 2-pointer game ratio, it can be quite difficult to be up there when you're making so many mistakes. But let's start things positive, because I want to chat about the laughs there, but I've got a much better thing that makes you more positive, and it's about we're chatting about Martin Bergeron, which I think you'll love. Do you want me to tell you it? Martin. Anyway, thoughts on, let's chat about Nottingham Forest, because a 2-0 win against the struggling Nottingham Forest. Chris Hughton was also sacked after the game as well. And what were your thoughts on the win? Because it seemed to be a win that was much needed, wasn't it, Dana?
It was. You can firmly...
Piero.
For that. I think you can firmly place it in the category of job done, because I didn't think Borough were great. I didn't even think Borough were good, really. But we didn't need to be, because we just needed the 3 points, didn't we? Forest were incredibly poor. But the goal that we scored, really enjoyed it. I liked the move as a whole from Dykesdale's tackle, Tav's little dribble past a very, I think you could call it a half-assed tackle from Lewis Graben. And then, I mean, the fact that you spotted the run of Spira, and the finish was the epitome of emphatic, wasn't it? It was a really good finish. So, yeah, that was a good goal. And, of course, we have to talk about Onil Hernandez's celebration. It was just glorious, wasn't it?
Schutthausery at its finest. But then Andres Spira, his first goal and his first start, given that you wrote a very detailed analysis on Spira, I'm assuming his performance must not have been a surprise for you, right?
No, not particularly. He obviously made those runs between the centre halves and down the sides of them, which I think we need to come to expect. And we've already seen it really in the past couple of games that he's been involved. And he's someone that wants the ball played to feet. You can see him when he's signalling for the ball being played in front of him. My only issue with him, and it's not with him, it's more with the service that we give him. We can't be just pinging balls forward to him like we were in the first 20 minutes against Forest, because although I think he does have a physical part of his game, he's not the type of striker whose strengths lie in taking balls down from the air, essentially, and bringing them down like a target man. I don't think he's a target man. He's somebody that has acceleration to just move beyond and in behind. But yeah, he did well. That was a good finish. And a little bit disappointed that we didn't give him that type of service again, because there were chances for us to do that in that game. But there's definitely something really exciting about Spira.
Yeah, well, how do you think he compares against Uche then? Is he a completely different striker, would you say? Like, I know you mentioned in there target man for Uche, but then do you think Spira would maybe relish off maybe a partnership with Uche?
Yeah, it was interesting when Warnock put Uche on with Spira against Blackpool. I would like to see that more often, but yeah, he is a completely different option to Uche. Uche is somebody that will pose a great physical battle to centre-halves, and they need to be up for it, because even when there's a player that's got hold of his shirt, he has the strength to essentially not really let that bother him. I think we saw that yesterday. There was somebody that was grappling with his shirt, and he basically just spun past them. But Uche is definitely someone that's going to pin and commit the centre-halves, whereas Spira is going to provide that bit of acceleration, the burst of pace to get him behind. So yeah, they're two good options to have, and it's good to have two different strikers like that, I think.
Two options, but I feel like there's a bit more quality with Spira, I think, in terms of technical ability. I think that there's just more to his game, I think, what Uche provides. But hey, both can be really effective in a game. But let's chat about Nottingham Forest a bit more, Tom, because obviously they did go on to sack Chris Hughton, but were you surprised at how poor Forest were in general as a team? Because they just seemed very lacklustre.
I wasn't surprised, but that was only based off the fact that I knew that they were poor this season anyway. Went into that game fully expecting us to win, because I thought if we didn't, we've got problems. But I really wasn't surprised at that at all. I was more surprised just with the start of their season, because I do think Chris Hughton's a good manager. I think we saw that at Brighton with the team he kind of built there. He just hasn't been able to replicate it at Forest, even despite, you know, a decent amount of signings in the summer. But Tuesday night wasn't a surprise.
Yeah, well, Nottingham Forest seem to be a team in decline anyway, because, I mean, what, 11 managers in 11 years and no one's been able to bring them success, so clearly there's some foundation issues. But
East Midlands in the mud.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we don't have to chat about Derby, but, I mean, that string's completely and utterly broke now, isn't it? But Tom, Ornel Hernandez, obviously that second goal, the shithousery of celebrations, but a good performance here. Does he excite you, Ornel Hernandez? Does he offer something a little bit different?
I wouldn't say excited right now after the two games, but yeah, he is offering something different. I do like the fact that we've got options down on either flank now.
Second one of the day.
But what I noticed from him against Forest and Blackpool, and we did note this about him after we just signed him as well, is the fact that crossing really isn't his strength. He was always kind of looking to cut inside and play it across the face of the box. I don't know, I wouldn't say... The reason I'm not saying excited is because, like, Isaiah Jones in the early games of the season, that he was an exciting player to watch because he was taking his man on getting the ball into the box. And although Hernandez, you can see he's got speed, he's got a decent amount of tricks and stuff like that, I just want to see him kind of take a man on a bit more. Not so much cross it in because it's clearly not his strength, but maybe pick a killer pass a little bit more.
Well, you were saying about Isaiah Jones potentially playing with two wingers. Why do you think we haven't seen that then?
I think we've just been probably trying to play with the inverted wingers with, you know, a right-footed Hernandez on the left and, you know, left-footed Tav on the right. I don't think it's necessarily worked particularly well against Blackpool. I'd like to kind of see a little bit more rotation there. I think we did mention either last week or the week before that no one in the team's really undroppable. You know, Jones has made kind of a decent impact off the bench yesterday, and he's on the bench against Forest as well. Did he come on? Can't remember.
It was so long ago.
Lots happened since Wednesday. But no, I mean, he looked enthusiastic going forward yesterday. It's obviously what you want to see, but yeah, just a little bit more kind of rotation in those positions, really.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think with Jones as well, his numbers are off the scale in the first couple of games that he played, and it was surprising to see him maybe dropped on the bench. But when you look at Tav and I think of what he brings to the team, I think Tav, I know it's a team full of undroppables, but I feel like Tav probably is undroppable because of what he brings to the team. And yes, I understand that, like, his numbers aren't off the scale, and it may not be that it's Premier League quality in terms of, you know, double assists, double goals this season, but I think what he brings is a lot more attacking flair. It always gets us up the pitch and it makes us a bit more exciting. Well, he's probably the most exciting player we've got, to be honest, and I think if you take Tav out the side, I feel like we lose so much. But for me, if we were to keep Tav in, it's a case of maybe have to move him central, which again, I don't want him to see him central. I quite like him out wide. He gives him more time on the ball. It helps him, you know, progress as a player. Because I can see him moving more in, like, inverted and more central as his career progresses. Maybe more box to box. But I think right now he's learning his game on the right hand side. He's developing as a really, really good talent. So maybe keep him there. But for Isaiah Jones, it's going to be like a case of him or Hernandez, or maybe move Hernandez in central. But then, like you're saying, you've got options, Dave. we got options with, like, with obviously with Pajero, Saliki, and then you've also maybe got Hernandez could maybe fill that void as well. So there is plenty of options, but Isaiah Jones, like, it's, I think we should hopefully see a little bit more from him. I think he's been unlucky to be dropped the last couple of games, but all in all,
you know what? I would say Jones over Hernandez for now. And, like, I think there's a case to be made for the reasoning that Jones has dropped because of maybe more him being rested than dropped. But I would play Jones over Hernandez for now, just because I think when you've got Tav cutting in from that right-hand side, it's good to have an outlet. And what we've seen from Jones this season, particularly in that game against Bristol City where he was very tight to the touchline, I think he would be good just to give Borough an out ball, someone to, you know, give it to. And we know what he can do. He can go on the outside and he can cut inside as well. So he has variety in his game. So for me, I would play Jones for now.
Yeah, I've been intrigued by Boris play actually the last couple of games, because we are starting to see the wingers be a lot more expansive and on the touchline a little bit more, which is interesting. I think with Neil Warnock's sides, his team's normally quite narrow, you know, and they're quite hard to break down, and then you tend to attack in like a diamond. But for us, we just don't really know how to attack at the minute, do we? Yeah. It's kind of very disjointed, and hence why we probably end up playing the ball back and just hoofing it long ball in the channels with no one there. But the win against Forest, Dana, it was massive because, you know, it tries to build confidence. But how big do you think it was for us to go into the game on Saturday with a win under our belts to try and take a little bit of pressure off Warnock and his team?
It was important on Wednesday up until the end of the game on Saturday, because you don't ever want a midweek victory and then have it not really count for much on the Saturday. And I don't think it counted for absolutely nothing, because if we'd have lost that game, then surely, having lost the game yesterday as well, Neil Warnock's position would have been even more under threat. I don't even know whether it's under threat, but there's definitely a change of opinion, and it is getting quite loud about him. But I mean, I genuinely thought that was the game and the win that would basically ignite a run, and it never did. And that's always disappointing. So, of course, at the time it was really important, but in the end, we haven't managed to add to it with another 3 points after. So, that's really disappointing.
Well, the win itself and a few hash browns as well, if you want to allude to Neil Warnock and players not having breakfast. It certainly did give Borough a lift on Saturday, especially within that first 20 minutes against Blackpool. You know, Tav scored, of course, and at the break in the second half, it just turned a bit of a horror show, didn't it? And the game really turned on its head, but the signs were there. After we scored, of course, we sat back after 30 minutes and we just tried to defend off our own box for 60. Why do you think the defeat was slipped away from Borough? Because they were in so much control that first 25 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think that we were great in the first half. And I've seen a lot of people say that we were, and I must have had my eyes stitched on back to front, because I really didn't think that we were. Maybe, like, you know, during that period in which we scored. But then after that, as you said, we sat back, and I said to my dad at half-time, I'm getting QPR flashbacks here, where we've gone into half-time in front, and it basically gives the opposition an open invitation to come back at us after the break. And Neil Critchley must have been fist pumping in the dressing room at half time, celebrating, thinking, you know, we've got an opportunity here to get back into the game. And when you give a team that sort of invitation, of course they're going to take it. I thought Blackpool were poor in the first half. They lacked that attacking conviction, but fair play to them, they came out in the second half and they added that. And yeah, again, as I mentioned a couple of podcasts ago, that window of opportunity, the other side of half-time, they had a chance within maybe a couple of minutes of the restart. And I feel like that set the tone for the rest of the game. And I knew it was coming, I thought, their goals.
Why do you think Borough looked so disjointed defensively then, Tom, in that second half?
I don't know. I mean, that's the only kind of answer I have with it. For me, like, of course, about a couple of years ago, when Warnock first came in, we were really poor defensively. He shored things up, and he's always been that kind of manager where you don't really have to worry about the defence with him, but it's more kind of making use of the attacking players. But now it just seems kind of disjointed all over the pitch. I just don't think we coped well with what Blackpool were throwing forwards at all. I thought Josh Baller played really well yesterday, kind of attacking the fullbacks, and they were trying to cut inside quite a lot as well, what I noticed. I just don't think we dealt with it at all. But the thing is, after half time, I don't think any of the players necessarily looked, I don't know what the right word is. They didn't look as motivated as they were in the first, really. Mm. I thought the only kind of change there, what we saw, was when Piero came on, who looked kind of... The only criticism I have of him is he was too eager to make an impact at times, because I know there was a time where it was going down the left where he pretty much nearly tackled Jones because they were both going for the same ball. But yeah, that level of motivation just seemed to kind of drop off from the first 20 minutes onwards and never really came back up.
I was going to say, do you think that's to do with the man marking? Because I know I don't like it, but surely when you're following a player for, you know, the time that we are, surely it weighs down on not just the physical game of a player, but the mental game as well.
Concentration levels.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So do you think that could potentially be a reason as to why we do seem to drop off in second half? Because it's certainly not the first second half where we've looked genuinely awful.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's definitely a pattern occurring really with Borough. I think when you watch teams now and they play against us, they're very reluctant to press and they're very happy to keep the ball for long spells against us now, because they know if they're patient in the delivery and, you know, the build up quite slow, we're going to be running around the pitch like headless chickens and tire out eventually. And by the 75th minute, we're knackered, and then obviously we haven't had our hash browns as well, so we're even more tired. And then the game starts to slip away from us. I think with Borough, I feel like they've completely lost the basics and foundations as a well set up team. I feel like we're making very silly errors, and also like I feel like teams are finding us out because of that really. And you know, there's a lot to obviously a game, and people will identify weaknesses, and there could be X, Y, and Z, and there's so much data to back so many different things in your opinion. But for me, I think it is teams now that are just willing to hold the ball for longer periods. The movement, if you have good off-the-ball movement, like you've seen with QPR, like with Blackpool, and obviously with the better teams, like probably like Fulham as well, they'll run you ragged for long periods of the game. So obviously it comes back to your point there, Dan, around man-marking for long spells. Yeah, it can be really difficult, especially if you've got a very athletic winger or a number 10. It's going to be really difficult for Borough, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it is frustrating because I think the Blackburn game, we did relax that man marking and we looked good. I think I really enjoyed that game against Blackburn. But I agree, I'm not really with this whole man marking thing. Certainly not every game.
Yeah, well I was mid coffee sip there.
I know, yeah.
You said that. with Blackburn, they're naturally a very counter-attacking team, so they don't want the ball for long spells, and they find that their best attack really is on the wide and trying to get it in, create the space in the middle for, you know, for shots for Barrett and Diaz to have an absolute ping from about 20 yards. And you know, hey, Bristol, he's fantastic up top, isn't he? So it's strange. I think it's really depend on who we play, but I think teams that are very comfortable on the ball will be very comfortable against Middlesbrough because we just don't seem to know what to do with it. And there's obviously the stat as well, Dana Borough have probably the worst ball retention in the Championship in comparison to the other teams. So do you think that's maybe playing a part as well? Borough hitting the ball on the long channels, trying to rest, and then they're trying to go again. Maybe the best thing for Borough could be to get the foot on the ball and just calm down a bit. Is that maybe the best route to go down?
Yeah, 100%, which is why I think it was a bit of a surprised that James Lisalicki had 47% passing accuracy yesterday, because I thought that
he's lost ever in
his
career.
I thought that him in the team would change that, but it's been really frustrating the past couple of games. I've noticed it that we just cannot seem to keep hold of the ball. I did say yesterday, I wonder how long it'll take for us to lose it, and I think within 2 seconds we did. And it seems almost predictable now that when we get the ball, we're not going to keep it for long spells. I think our average passing sequence was 3. I'm surprised it was even that, to be honest, because it felt like every time we got it, we just lost it immediately. And it's been a particular problem in the last 2 Saturday games, because against Coventry, we lost the ball. I think it was 180. I think I said 185. I think it was 186, just to be pedantic about myself there. And then
disgusting.
I know.
Fake news. Fake facts.
One misplaced pass out. But yeah, slap on the wrist there. But the game yesterday, we lost it 170 times. And it just seems so predictable now that we just can't get our foot on the ball and keep it. Whereas I think that's what we need to do.
Do you think it might be like due to a rush going forwards? Because what I noticed yesterday, I thought Blackpool were keeping the ball really well. And there was a good like 5-minute spell in the second half where we couldn't really get near it. And every time we got it, it was just like 1 or 2 passes. And then like just trying to play it quite a quick ball to one of the wingers or into Spurra. I think it was only when I think Housen got hold of the ball and we started playing it across the floor and started playing a few shorter passes at that point, we started looking a bit better. But other than that, like, it'd go to, say, Crooks or Saliki, and they seem to just be going with a very direct pass. And I feel like that might be the reason why Saliki's passing accuracy was so low. Mm. What I kind of noticed, like, the Coventry match and that match, because before the Coventry match, I think it was Spurs-Palace that was on earlier in the day. And Spurs looked terrible in that game. And I was watching them, like, they can't string two passes together. Like, I couldn't imagine watching Borough do this, and then we've done it for, like, last 2 days. Last two games, sorry. It's looked exactly the same as what I watched in that game.
Yeah, with Spurs that game, they had Højbjerg, Skip and Winks in the midfield, and they're all very similar midfielders. Mm. So, like, I think that's probably why they struggled so much, because they didn't really have, like, an outlet. But it's the same with Borough. They don't really have a significant outlet, and it comes back to that point, just getting your foot on the ball and just being calm in possession. I think there was a bit of play yesterday, I think, where we had the ball on the right-hand side. It was Dykstra had the ball on the wing, and we end up playing our way out of trouble. And I think it was about five or six passes, and it was probably our best pattern of play we had all game. And it obviously came to nothing because it was just trying to, you know, play possession football. Mm. And obviously, that was drilled out of us straight away at half-time. but for me, I think with Saliki, I think that first 10-15 minutes, I was thinking, oh, hashtag freaky for Saliki, you know, like, I quite like this boy, you know, he's good, he's a good footballer, and you can see there's quality there.
Yeah, the absolutely.
Real quality. And his probably possession rate was probably crap because, yeah, like, when we get the ball, it's very much right, okay, we've won it, let's boot it in the channels. Sparrow, you run onto it. Jones, you do something. I don't know, like...
That's
you know,
it.
You know what it is? Like, it's just like sheer panic when we have the ball. I don't understand it. You know, like, I think for Borough, it is a case of just relax. Like, just literally, just. And honestly, it's very easy for me to say that just on a podcast.
Because remember, it's harder to play football than watch it.
To be fair, Johnny, you said it to me the other week playing seven aside. Like, playing up front, you just, like, take your time when you're on the ball and don't panic and end up scoring three, like, the game after that. Like,
yeah, you see, Johnny Bullock, tactician of the year, you know what I mean?
Johnny for manager.
Johnny for gaffer.
Our new manager over here.
I better renew me badges, you know what I mean? But I think it's difficult for Borough, you know. I think when you look at teams as well and when they play against us, their press is quite high straight away as soon as we get the ball because they know we're not confident in possession. And that's why we probably resort to, like, just hoofballing the channels. And I don't know, I'm not an expert, but I think if you hoof a ball at the channel and no one's there, it's probably you're not going to score many goals in a season, you know. So it's difficult, and there's so many ways we can go down and dissect performance. But overall, I think when it comes down to it, I don't think Neil Warnock knows how to get the best out of this attacking outlets that we have. And that's not a bad thing on him. I think it's just a case of he's naturally a defensive coach. He has his style, and I think the players that we've brought in just don't suit what he wants to do as a manager, and that's putting it brutal, honestly, really. But you never know with these things; it can change. And obviously, Neil Warnock, most decorated championship manager ever, but that doesn't mean that you're good right now. I mean, you could be the best in class for many, many years, but why does a footballer always deteriorate as they get older? Do you know what I mean? It's you're never going to be on top of the world for long unless you're a genetic freak like Ronaldo or Messi. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah.
But yeah, obviously the game yesterday, it did change as well when Tav had to resort in going to right back. But Tom, with Dykstra going off, Borough now have a lack of options. How much of a miss do you think that be? And do you think it's more bizarre now that we let Spence go?
I don't think it's necessarily bizarre that we let Spence go.
Man of the match yesterday for Forest.
I'm good on him. But I thought, going into this season, Peltier was clearly the second choice right back, mm-hmm. who has then had to deputise at left back because we didn't bring in the left back. So I think Dykstra's going to be a massive miss unless, you know, Bowler manages to come back before Reading, which I hope to God he does, and then we can switch back to switch Peltier back over to the right, because otherwise we've got nothing. We're going to have to play with you know, probably Tav and Hernandez as wing backs or something, and you know, we've loaned out our only wing back, so it seems back to square one, and that does seem a daft decision in that case. But you know, with the system that we had, we seem to be picking up kind of too many injuries at the moment, and I'd love to kind of know why that is. Whether, you know, Neil Warnock's having the Patches O'Houlihan school of dodgeball coaching as his training sessions, like if he can kick a brick, he can kick a ball or something. But it just seems to happen.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Far too often. I think it's been said before, like, when you're kind of losing team, you tend to pick these injuries up a lot more. When you look at, say, like the promotion season for us, how many people were missing with long-term injuries that season, like, I think it came out this week. I can't remember who it was who tweeted it. I think it was someone from BBC Tees or the Gazette maybe, said all the way through the promotion season, Ledbetter was playing with something he needed an operation on, and he waited until the end of the season and played through it just to make sure we got promoted, and ended up missing like a fair chunk of the Premier League season because of that. But he kept going through that Championship season. And, you know, I think that's what it comes down to, like, winning team. You've got people who want to play and will play through that. And then in this case, it just seems to be happening far too often, whether or not that's that type of issue or something wrong with training or something like that. I'm not sure, but that seems to be a real issue for us at the moment.
So are you suggesting that the players don't want to play for Warnock? Is that what you're suggesting?
No, not necessarily. Just there might be something wrong with, like I say, with training. People not eating the shreddies on a morning, like
need to get on your Weetabix minis, Tom.
Oh, absolutely. Weetabix minis and churro frappuccino, and then you sort it for the day.
Really? But you're going to crash in about 20 minutes.
Oh no, it's going to be awful. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's potential issues kind of there. What it is, I'm not sure. I don't work with them every day, but it's down to Warnock and the coaching staff to find out and put right.
You were saying there around Pelletier maybe moving back over, but maybe Johnny Howson, he played very, very well right back under Jonathan Woodgate. Can you maybe see him moving there next game and potentially keeping Pelletier left back if Baller's not fit?
Potentially. I'm sure he would. It's probably not something anyone really wants to see, but I'm sure he would cover there.
Fair enough. And Dana, do you think it's more bizarre that we let Spence go then? More bizarre?
No, I kind of agree with Tom that it's actually more bizarre that we haven't brought in a left-back yet, because we had the right-footed Lee Pelletier playing on the left and then the left-footed Marcus Tavernier playing on the right. So it was it was weird that he didn't switch them. But, yeah, I think it's... I mean, how long have we had to get a left-back now? It's... when we bring one in, and hopefully we do, then that means that Pelletier is the backup, should we say, or the competition right back. So yeah, it's definitely more bizarre that we that we haven't brought in a left back, I think.
Yeah, well, obviously with Tav moving at right back, ultimately, do you think killed the play as well for?
Yeah, I mean, he's our best attacking player, and for me, our best player anyway. So when you're putting him right back, you're always going to take a considerable hit in terms of the quality of your attacking player. So it didn't help. We looked incredibly unbalanced. I did wonder in the game, I was like, wait, who's playing left? Who's playing right back? Is it Tav? And then I was like, well, where's... And then I went to say Spencer, and I realised that we'd loaned him out. And then I was thinking, well... Because you remember when we did that sort of squad depth, and there was... I think Daniel Fisher was out injured at that point, but then we had Dykstale, Peltier, and who else am I missing?
Spence.
I think my brain's... Yeah, Spence. My brain just died there. Never mind you crashing, it was me. But yeah, we looked at that right-back position and we thought, yeah, we're fine. And then suddenly we're in a position now where we're not. So I'm sort of sat here thinking, how the hell has that happened? Yeah. And it's because I think we haven't brought in a left-back, so now we're having a right-back play left-back, so it's just all a bit of a mess, really.
Inverted full-backs is a revelation. But do you think, obviously, with an assist and a goal this week for Tav, really just highlight like how much of an influence he has on this team?
Oh, yeah, he's our best player, 100%. And I did take offence, really, to it on behalf of Tav, about a comment that I saw where someone said he doesn't get stuck in. I have never seen a player or an attacking player that is as all-rounded as Tav is in terms of his offensive player and his defensive player. One of my favourite moments of Tav is Coventry at home last season, where he tracked all the way back and stopped a sure goal with a last-ditch tackle, I think it was on Matt Gordon. And that was part of his defensive play, and that's one of my favourite moments of his. He's a fantastic player, and he's, you know, you mentioned that in terms of, or earlier in terms of goals and assists. A lot of people get sucked into goals and assists, but his underlying stats are very good in terms of the expected assists, the expected threat, those sort of metrics. He's very good. He is a Premier League player in the waiting, and as soon as he does add that final product, he will be in the Premier League.
Mm. I can really see him being that box-to-box midfielder in maybe 1 or 2 years' time. I think him playing on the right now is just really developing his skills as a footballer, and I can only speak highly of him. I really, really can. Remember when you used to hate him, Dan? But I mean, just like...
Hey.
No, I'm joking. But like, it's he is probably is Borough's best player by a good country mile. Be interesting to see how he progresses in his career in the next, probably, I say in there, 1 or 2 years. Probably won't be at Borough for much longer, but overall, I think he's very, very good. But yesterday, obviously, we saw Martin Pajero come in. Now he's overtook Alessania in terms of battle for more minutes. But Tom, do you think his performance warranted maybe a start against Reading next week?
I thought he looked really good when he came on. He looked, you know, desperate to affect the play and get us back into it, because obviously he was waiting to come on as they scored their second, so he's probably been more motivated by that, thinking, right, we can't lose this. Like I said, my only criticism of him earlier was probably being too eager to do it and trying to take the ball off our own players. And there was a point where he was trying to dribble it across the face of the box looking to get a shot in, and I mean, if he'd have managed it, great, but he was trying to do a little bit too much himself. But other than that, I thought he looked really good. Obviously hit the bar with a shot I don't think anyone was expecting to go there. And you know, that free kick looked decent. You know, on FIFA he might have scored that, but probably not in real life. I think he looked really positive, and I'd like to see him get more minutes now.
Would you put him in the 11?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well...
I'm going, I want to watch it.
Yeah, you've got a nice little weekend planned, haven't you? Do you know?
Aye.
Reading and then Anthony Joshua fight. Then Elliot's coming back for one podcast, so... Yeah, they were surprised me. But let's chat about Reading then. But first, before we get to Reading, a quick message about our fundraiser for the Motor Neurone Disease Association.
We want to make a difference on the podcast this year, and we need your help to do it. We've partnered with the Motor Neurone Disease Association, which is a charity incredibly close to myself and my family. In 2015, my mother was diagnosed with MND, and I saw firsthand the deterioration of somebody that I loved. If you don't already know, motor neurone disease is fatal, and gradually takes away a person's ability to walk, talk, eat, drink, and breathe. Thanks to the MNDA, my mother was able to communicate despite no longer being able to speak. Please give what you can to help them continue this fantastic support to www.justgiving.com/theboroughbreakdownmnd.
Okay, so let's talk about Borough's trip to Reading. This week, we spoke to not one, but two Reading podcasts, the Elm Park Royals and the Tylehurst End, and what to expect on Saturday, starting off with the Tylehurst End.
Reading's a team that's a little bit difficult to sum up tactically. We are very much a team that's in transition at the minute, given that we lost so many players from last season, key players like Elise and Richards. We've had players injured this season quite a lot already. And the players that we did manage to bring in over the summer, so six overall, they haven't had enough time to get really up to speed properly yet, and creating a cohesive, finished team out of that is difficult. And because of that, the form hasn't been good enough and the results haven't been good enough, really, until after the international break. I don't think that's any real surprise, given that we essentially needed that extra time to get players up to speed and to improve performances. That being said, Reading are predominantly a 4-2-3-1 side. Last season, the two in that team were a bit more defensive, Andy Rinomota and Josh Laurent. But bringing in Tom Dely-Bashiru this summer has allowed us to be a bit more attacking in that position, get a bit more dynamic in the middle of the park. Otherwise, Ovi Ajara and Alan Halilovic are really important wide players in the 4-2-3-1, cutting inside from their respective flanks and helping out with the striker and helping out John Swift, who's such a vital number 10 for this team in terms of dictating the play and unlocking defences. Ahead of them is George Puskas, our lone striker, usually, although he didn't start against Fulham. That was Junior Hoylett, who came in to do a different job. But Puskas is someone who will try and get in behind. He'll try and make those runs, and he'll try to capitalise on space that opens up. He's not someone who can really bully a defence. He's not that kind of classic target man who wins headers and holds the ball up in that kind of way. He's someone that really needs the space and he needs the supply. So if Middlesbrough can reduce the space that he's able to run into, then that will go a long way to cutting off the supply and making sure he doesn't have much of an impact.
Recently, we have been playing a bit more of a 4-1-4-1. With all the injuries that we've had, it's been difficult to, you know, find pairings. And I think Josh Laurent has then ended up playing as a lone holding midfield player with Dely-Bashiru and John Swift just in front of him. Whether that suits them all, it's kind of hard to say. But yeah, it's been a lot more defensive. Like against Peterborough, we sat back. Against Fulham, which was obviously a great result, it was entirely about playing on the counter, and that worked quite well. Against Fulham, we played Junior Hoylett up front rather than George Puskas, which, I mean, the result is the result, so I guess it worked. I'm not entirely sure that we'll stick with it.
Going into this game, it looks very much like one that Reading have to win to really build up some momentum, basically, because the results before the international break were so poor, four defeats and one win. But we've really started to build up a bit of momentum after that, with a win over Peterborough, a terrific win against Fulham, and a draw against QPR as well, which was creditable despite blowing a two-goal lead quite late on. So looking at this Middlesbrough game, it's a really good opportunity for us to say, right, we've put the poor performances and the poor results early on in the season behind us, and we can really start to put some wins together and push ourselves up the table.
At home, in front of the Select Car Leasing, with a good win under the belt from this weekend, I'd expect it to be a good game, a cagey game, and hopefully one that we don't lose. That's about my level of optimism, even given the results this week.
I'm hoping that Puskas coming into the team and picking up a little bit of form, although he didn't start against Fulham, will give us that bit of quality and that bit of incision in the final third. But if he didn't, if he doesn't rather, it could be a really difficult game for us, and I guess because of that, I'm a little bit worried, despite a really good performance against Fulham coming into this game. is still the kind of match that we could slip up in. And although I'm quietly confident, it's one that could go either way, I guess.
Okay, so guys, thank you very much, Alpac Royals and Tylerson, for that. Guys, what's your thoughts on Reading and what are your predictions? Tom, do you want to go first?
Well, I saw a stat this week. They've got the most goals against in the league so far and second most goals for. So it's guaranteed to be a 0-0 draw because I've got a ticket for it. So there's my prediction. It's either going to be like a 1-1, isn't it? Because it's always going to be 1-1.
Yeah, statistically, over the years we've been in the Championship, Boroughs for and against is actually it's a 1-1 draw. As the average, it's mad that, isn't it? I mean, it's like 1.7 for goals for and then 1.08 for goals against. So 1-1, if you ever think about a bet, 1-1. But Dana, what's your thoughts on Reading and prediction?
Yeah, I was a bit confused about Reading going into the season because after last season, I didn't expect them to be a playoff side as they once were last season, or trying to be anyways. But I thought they'd be top 10, and they could still be, but they've had a lot of injuries. They've got Yaku Mete and Lucas Zhao out injured. And then they still have some good players, though, to be fair. I really like Josh Laurent in midfield, really like Ovi Ejaria, and then John Swift as well, of course, their main man, really. So they've got some good players still, and so they've still got that quality. I definitely agree with Tom, though. It's a nailed-on 0-0 for me.
Okay. Yeah, well, seeing Ejaria's turn yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Very good goal. Really good goal.
Beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. It was a little bit like Mark Bowlers in a way, where he just turns it and then smacks it in. But
a little bit more intentional than
Bowlers. Well, I probably didn't mean it, but Ejaria 100% did. It was wonderful. Yeah. But let's move on to podcast questions, and you guys, of course, send them in from Twitter. And we answer them on the podcast. And the first question of the day is from Luke Dana. And he says, why are injuries so prevalent in the squad?
God knows.
Prevalent. Not prevalent.
Yeah, I was thinking that. What did you say?
Relevant.
Close. But I was thinking yesterday, Neil Warnock's probably going to blame the steam being emitted from the burger vans outside the Riverside for getting into the players' muscles and causing these injuries. But to tell you the truth, I really don't know. And it always seems to happen to key players as well in key positions. It's really weird. I honestly don't have an answer, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough. Tom, next question is from Ian. He says, are some of the players not playing for Warnock? His very public comments about players' attitudes, etc., may have ruffled a few feathers. So has he lost a few of them?
I think it's possible. Obviously, couldn't say for sure, not being... I'd love to be a fly on the wall in the dressing room just to kind of see what...
You're going to say fly on the riverside,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, fly on the riverside, but... be a deal fly, but... I'd love to see kind of what goes on behind closed doors and know that, but we don't. But I think it is a possibility.
See, I don't feel like it's necessarily a case of the players not playing for Warnock. I think it's more that the players are playing the Warnock way, and the Warnock way is outdated.
Okay, so the next question was from Ben. He did say, has the Championship progressed in the past 4 or 5 seasons to the point where our tactics are dated? Hughton was sacked, Warnock struggling, and Ben was saying, I thought Cardiff were going to walk the league, but they sit in 10th. Then you find Huddersfield, who are favourites to go down, but they're getting results and they're currently 7th in the Championship table. So do you think it's a case that tactics are getting, you know, a bit dated?
I think so, because you mentioned earlier about Chris Hughton building a good Brighton team, but that was back in, what was it, 2015-16, which is a lot longer ago than I thought. I mean, 2015-16 to me seems like maybe a year ago, but it isn't. I need to remind myself of that sometimes. But yeah, I definitely do think that there's been a change in the Championship, and this sort of kick it and hoof it isn't as effective as it once was. And I think what's being bred now in the Championship is more progressive possession-based football. And it would be good to maybe hear an opinion piece on this or an analysis from, I don't know, Michael Cox or something like that about this, but in terms of the styles of play. But I definitely think that the Warnock way is getting a little bit tired in terms of the Championship.
I'd have to agree about the more progressive possession style play being more prevalent now. I think you can kind of see it in the promoted teams when they go up to the Premier League. The ones who tend to do best are the ones who actually play football. And you can see that with like Leeds, Wolves, that when they went up, maybe not so much now. Obviously, Brentford seem to be kind of handling it quite well as well. But you maybe have teams that don't play football as well, just come back straight back down. I'd like to kind of see us move more towards that, because as we saw yesterday, when we actually play it on the floor, we can play some good stuff at times, but it seems to be far too direct at times.
Okay, so the next question then is from Nick Tom, and he says, how long do you give Warnock before we pass judgment as to the rest of the season?
I think we had a similar question last week, and we kind of said Christmas / the next international break. Personally, at the moment, taking the second half of last season into account as well, I'd go the next international break.
Okay. Very short. It's only in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, I think we've got some key games coming up that, I mean, with all respect to them, we should have been looking at Coventry and Blackpool and thinking we should win these. And although I think personally they've got the blocks in place to be really good teams in a couple of seasons' time. If, you know, we're going for playoffs or something this year, like everyone keeps saying, I've heard a lot on the BBC teams phone in yesterday, and Maddo was saying in particular, like, he'd be disappointed if we didn't get playoffs this season. If that's our aim, we need to be winning those games. Like, there's no excuses for losing them, all the type of performances that we're putting in. So I think we need to put things right and do it quickly.
Yeah, okay.
I will say, just adding to that, there was a post on Wanborough, and credit to Teesside of 24 for this. They say in 2021, we've played 33 games and won 11, drawn 7 and lost 15. That's a points per game of 1.21. Just making sixth on average requires 1.6 points per game, which we are nowhere near right now. So, I mean, the question is, obviously, playoffs will be the aim, but at present, I don't think that we even have the hallmarks of a side that will be in the playoffs. And people, the defence of Neil Warnock is that it's early days. This is a new team. But from my knowledge of Neil Warnock teams pre-Borough, they were big on wide play, getting the ball to the wide players very quickly. And at Borough, particularly last January, Warnock was blessed with those options. He had Bolasie, Cabano, Mendes Lang, Tav before his injury, Watmore as well. So we had the wide players and we regressed. We got worse. So I don't have the most confidence that he's going to get the best out of this attacking, the attacking options that we've got.
Okay. For me, right, and I don't know if you agree with this as well, it's kind of feeling like that last season under Mowbray, because I feel like we went into that season quite optimistic, thinking we'd signed a Dormer and our team was looking a little bit more well-rounded, and, you know, this is probably the season where we can push on, and it looks severely disjointed up until, obviously, he got let go. So I get the same kind of feeling at the moment. Like, we've went into the season quite optimistic. It's a new team. We've got all these quality players. We're looking a lot more well-rounded, and it's just looking disjointed all over the pitch at the moment.
Well, to give you a little stat, on average, Middlesbrough, since they've been in the Championship over like the last 11 years now, we've averaged 68 points in a season, and now the average sixth place points is 74. So obviously we're way off that, and then obviously appreciate 75.9 is for fifth, 78 is for fourth, 82 is for third, 87 for second, and then 94 for first. There's only four times in that space where Millers have actually reached that target to get into the playoffs, and appreciate that was under Tony Pulis and Aitor Karanka. Mm-hmm. So there you are, fun stats of the day. But obviously, you know, two of those were under Karanka, and then obviously Pulis just got us in and thereabouts. Next question is the probability that this is Warnock's last job before retirement going to make a difference to Gibson's decision making to sack him, so he can go out with dignity? So, Dana, do you think since it's Warnock's last job, Gibson's holding fire a little bit?
I don't know because I feel like Gibson is one of those managers that will wait until probably the very last second to allow the manager to try to turn things around. But he has to be looking at this start to the season. He surely won't be impressed with it. I mean, 2 wins in 8, and those 2 wins came against a very, very poor Forest side and a very poor Bristol City side. It's not great. It's not a great run in the season so far, and it hasn't been a great run in 2021. I would like to hope that Gibson wouldn't do that and wouldn't keep him on just because it's his last job. I don't know. I don't like the fact that that could be a possibility, but you never know, do you? I mean, is it going to be Warnock's last job? That's another question. He has been saying that since day dot, so I don't know. But I'd like to hope that he's not just going to sort of let this continue or potentially get worse just to sort of save Warnock's Hollywood moment at the end of his managerial career.
Just to kind of add to that as well, we mentioned last week about Sam Morsy and said with this new kind of direction that the club's going in, there was clearly kind of no sentimentality around letting him go. Mm. I think that should apply to all levels of the club. Like, they shouldn't...
Yeah.
Although it obviously is a big thing for Warnock, if it is his last job, you shouldn't be hanging on too long because of sentimental reasons. Like, and I'd hope that decision's kind of more with Kieran Scott now. Obviously, we've heard a little bit about his new role and saying he's coming to oversee all things football. You'd hope management kind of falls under that as well. I'd hope it's kind of with someone who's going to be a little bit more kind of ruthless there, and like you say, just no room for sentimentality with it.
Okay, so the last question was from Tom, but not you, Tom.
I was going to say.
Tom,
just thought, have you submitted a question for the podcast, Tom?
That's what I've been doing.
Then the next question would be, what realistic managerial targets should we look at? It's from James. So is there any managerial targets we should be looking at? No. Okay.
No,
I'm going to take it then.
Go on then.
I was going to say I'll take the job.
Right. I thought you were going to say you're going to reel off a list of targets. No, but I think people look at. I will say straight off the bat, Eddie Howe is not realistic. A lot of people are saying that. I don't think Eddie Howe is realistic. There's potentially Chris Wilder. I don't know. I think Chris Wilder was interested.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In the Nottingham Forest job, if I'm right, so surely... It's actually, somewhat realistic for him to be interested in the Borough one. Frank Lampard's available.
Frank Lampard, really, going from, you know, Champions League to Championship.
He's not a Premier League manager. I think he needs that Championship job where he achieves promotion. He was incredibly out of his depth at Chelsea. He's potentially a lower half Premier League manager, but only off his own name, not because of his managerial ability. I think in terms of his managerial ability, he's a Championship manager that could potentially grow to a Premier League manager. But he's one that has been mentioned a little bit. But again, I will throw Ryan Law's name into the hat. Really like the style of player that Plymouth have. He did very well with Bury as well. Michael Appleton at Lincoln's doing a fantastic job with them, but obviously they're two managers that are in a job currently. So I don't know where Borough will look at. Are they going to look for a manager that is out of a job, or are they going to try to pick a manager up that is currently in a job and buy them out of their contract? I think that the latter, what I've just said there, is probably the best way for Borough to go, because if you want the best managers, sometimes you have to go down that route.
Yeah, Tom, is there any managerial realistic ones?
Well, obviously, if you don't get it, I'd be looking. To be honest, I saw a post on One Borough last night, and I can't remember who said it, so I can't credit it.
We are big lurkers on One Borough, aren't we?
You are the Borough lurkers.
But There is actually a guy called Lurker on Wanbury as well. It's neither of us.
It is me.
I saw this post, right, and it was talking about Stuart Webber at Norwich, and apparently his kind of approach to hiring a manager was to go through managers who've completed the coaching badges with the German FA, because that's a lot more difficult to pass. So I personally think when it is time for a new manager, we will be kind of looking abroad anyway. And I reckon Kieran Scott might take that same approach if it is his decision to bring in someone who's accomplished a little bit abroad and completed the coaching badges over there.
Yeah.
Welcome, Michael Kolner.
Well, I'm wearing an 1860 Munich shirt right now, so it's all pointing at me here.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't get my badges at in Germany. No. No, I got them in Durham, but it's the same place, isn't it, really? But we'll go last question of the day, and it's from Chris, and he says, if Grant Hall is the answer, what is the question? He wants to go for it.
You know what, I'm going to be positive here and say a lean, mean heading machine. Because he is very good at those aerial drills. He loves a header, does Grant Hall.
Yeah.
Not very good in terms of when he gets turned.
I'm going to go with who's got the whitest teeth on Teesside.
Oh, you've took
mine. You just nicked that tapping off Tom there, didn't you?
I know, yeah.
You are Dave Nugent. David Nugent,
I really am. I took an opportunity there, and I just seen it. I had to take it. Tom, is there any other questions you want to go with on that? No?
No, I can't think of anything now. You ruined it.
Oh, okay, man. That's it then, guys. Thank you very much for joining me, as always. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. That helps us get charted and found by other Borough fans. And we have been charted over the last few weeks in the UK football chat. So thank you very much for that. But with one win, one defeat, and frustration starting to grow on Teesside, it could be a bumpy road ahead. But this is the Borough Breakdown podcast, and that was all your match day chat in a pod of the Borough Breakdown.